All right. Is everyone ready to start? How is everyone? Everyone's got the Mountain Goat Summer Ale? Woohoo. Excellent. Cool. So just quickly, before we kick it off, kind of explain how it's going to go tonight. It's basically going to go like an episode of the podcast. We're going to talk shit about beer, except this time you guys can join in as well. You guys are getting all the same beer we drink, obviously, and Lee's walking around with a microphone, so if at any point you have a question, put your hand up, he'll come to you, and he'll vet your question first, but
And you can tweet it at hashtag Quanda as well.
Yeah. So. Yeah, please use the hashtag, Q&A, because it's a bit of a Q&A between brewers and that's why, right?
Yep.
Okay.
I don't think it's being used at all.
Not on a
Monday night.
I checked. On Mondays, it's fine.
Yeah, cool.
So good.
Sweet.
All right. So we might get kicked off.
Yeah, just a big shout out to the Pump House for hosting this.
Yeah, thank you very much, Pump House. Give them a round of applause.
Yeah.
And big shout out to Mountain Goats.
Yeah, so Mountain Goat has decided to shout us our tinnies for tonight. So a big thanks to Ed and the boys. And so cheers, everyone.
Yeah, thanks,
man. Cheers.
Cool, so...
Before we get started, Tom, I'd like to request a trade to Alevertime. Is that possible?
Your contract's all the way until the end of this year, man.
Oh, damn. Can we do like a three-way trade? Like, I'll go to Beer Diary, Phil goes to them.
We're not allowed to trade in, man. Otherwise, you have to give up our cola.
That's all right. We don't get paid anyway, so...
Yeah. Yeah.
Two people got it. Yay.
All right.
Sweet.
Here we go. All right. So, do you want to do the...
I'm going to do the live version, probably a really bad live version of the intro theme. My voice is a bit raspy from Frankie's last night, so I'll get all of you to shout out Sessionable at the end, and I'll just do the chords. So, let's see how this goes.
Do we not think we know the beats?
Sessionable! There we go.
Right.
Thank you.
That was awesome, man.
All right, so we should probably start by introducing our guests, hey? We've got some excellent guests, or awesome guests. I don't know what I'm saying at the moment.
Dave's here. It's awesome.
All right. But we're not introducing Dave first. I think we're introducing our other guests first. So I've got some intro music lined up for both guests. So let's hope this works. All right.
No sleep till...
You're gonna love it.
Sure, it's
all right. So, with that,
no fade on that.
We go hard. We go raw.
Quick and dirty edits. That's what I'm all about. So, I'd love to introduce Shane Welch from Six Point. All the way from Brooklyn, and we are super excited to have you here, man.
Awesome.
Yeah, big, like, yeah. Oh, man, I love your beers. I'm a bit right now. Why don't you guys talk a bit?
So, Shane, how's your time been in Sydney so far?
Been great, and then we're just warming up. We have, Johnny and I now, over the next 10 days, I think we have something like 13 or 14 different events that we're doing. So we're doing more than one a day for the next week and a half. Psyched.
Wow, yeah.
We're here in Sydney for Sydney Craft Beer Week. At the end of the week, we're in Adelaide, and then we're in Brisbane, and then Melbourne for 2 days after that.
That's a pretty hectic tour, man.
Yeah, and then fly back to the U.S. direct.
Exciting stuff.
Is this your first time in Sydney?
No, but it's been about 13 or 14 years.
So before you were brewing?
Wow.
Okay.
That's changed.
Right.
The beer's changed a little bit.
Yeah. Sure. Just a little bit, yeah. He's on his phone right now, but I'll play his intro music while he texts, I think.
He's taking selfies again.
Really? Really? You'd love this.
Come on. Surely you've got the other one. Come on.
I was going to get the other one up, but I just this was more fun.
Awesome. Love it. Thank you.
So Dave Patton from Riverside Brewing's here.
Give it up for Dave.
Nice.
Welcome back.
Yeah, welcome back to the show. Dave's been on Sessionable before.
Have you ever had somebody come back before?
I mean, Adrian, Liam, and I come back every 2 weeks.
Reluctantly.
reluctantly. Yeah, sure.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
No, not a problem. And so Dave's been on the show before. We've got beers from both brewers tonight. So we've got a Riverside beer coming up and a Six Point beer coming up. But I thought maybe it's a good thing to start with by just talking about the Mountain Goat Summer. What we think.
Shane, what do you think? You've probably had this for the first time, I'm hoping.
My very first time was cracking one of these open 15 minutes ago. I actually could crush this. I like it a lot.
Yeah.
I was interested to see what the alcohol percentage was on it. I think it's 4.7, right?
Yeah.
That's a great summer beer. Yeah. It has just enough hop character to it. There's a little bit of a citrus bite to it, and I like the fact that it's a little hazy. It makes me think, maybe is it made with wheat?
Yeah.
Does it have any wheat?
Yeah, I think there's some wheat in there.
Yeah. I think there's wheat in it. Yes. From memory,
it tastes like it too. So.
Yeah.
It's really good to see craft beer in cans here too.
It's starting.
Just so the folks know here too, like the acceptance of craft beer in cans. There were a lot of American craft brewers that had to take a lot of heat and abuse for years because trying to sell craft beer in cans, we were constantly, the customers didn't want to buy it. So they saw craft beer in a can and they always would reject it, or the retailer wouldn't never want to buy it. It took years to get the public to accept it. Once they did accept it, now you're seeing it go all the way around the world.
Yeah.
So they got craft beer in cans in the UK, Brazil, Australia.
Well, I think definitely in Australia, this beer has probably led the way for craft beer in the cans and leading the acceptance for people drinking craft beer in the cans.
Yeah. We've got a question. Here we go. Oh, Brad's already into the questions. All right.
Hi there, guys.
Hey, Brad.
Brad here, friend of the show. Just wanted to know, Shane, what you think of the Galaxy Hop in general and whether you've used it much in your brewing experience.
Yeah. Galaxy, there's probably a lot of very beer-savvy people in the crowd, but for those of you who don't know, Galaxy is an Australian hop that was developed in the 90s, and it was actually given to SAB Miller, who was looking for high alpha hop straights. It was developed by the Haas Breeding Group. They were given this hop. They tried it. They had no use for it, so they just got rid of it, right? So it sat around for about 10 years until American craft brewers discovered it about 5-10 years ago. And they realized that you could make really awesome IPA with it. So all of a sudden in the past 5 years, the demand for Galaxy hops has essentially skyrocketed. Galaxy hops now have gotten to the point where they're very hard to come by, where American craft brewers have bought all the supply, so now a lot of the Australian brewers don't have access to them. But to directly answer your question, I mean, they're phenomenal. I mean, you know, we don't really have... The closest thing that we have is maybe Citra or Simcoe, but those are hard to get now, too, so... We keep buying more and more of your stock. More and more of the Galaxy Hop is now being exported to the United States for American craft brewers. We're not even that large of a craft brewery, and we bought a significant portion of the harvest. So.
So, Dave, what's your thoughts on Galaxy?
Oh, we're a massive fan of it as well. I think. The US and Stone and Wood tend to buy most of the Galaxy hops, but we haven't had too many problems in the last 12 months with supply. Our summer ale, very similar beer, wheat ale malt, and we're 100% Galaxy in our summer ale. So if we do run over it, we're going to get in a whole lot of trouble. But we haven't had any problems yet in the last 2 years. So. It's beautiful hop, love it.
Do you use it in any other beers? Or?
No, not at all. It's quite a difficult hop to work with such a light beer as well. With the alpha acid is incredibly high, as I think you mentioned. It was originally probably a bittering hop. So when you're trying to develop a beer that's very low on bitterness like this and high on flavour and aroma, you don't want to be sitting in the whirlpool or any stage for very long at all.
So Shane, how many beers do you have that you use Galaxy?
We have three. We use some in the Bengali, we use some in the High Res, and we also use some in a new beer that we're releasing this January called Beast Mode.
Nice. So Beast Mode, how is that going to fit in with the other styles that you've done already?
It's not a style that we have done already, so it's going to be something completely new. So 4.5 years ago, I started a nonprofit in New York City.
It's really bad.
And it basically raises money for shelter animals, raises money for the Humane Society there. And every year we do all these custom beers for the event. And I was thinking, well, maybe we should start to do an annual release beer, too, to commemorate the event, and one that we can also help raise awareness and money for the charity. So the name of the charity is called Beer for Beasts. So we're making a beer called Beast Mode, which is going to draw more attention to the charity that we work with.
Awesome.
This year is pretty awesome because we raised over $100,000 for the Humane Society of New York.
Wow.
And we're really, our partners there are super psyched by all the work and the resources that we've been able to bring in for them. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, great. Now, of the beer, so how long have you been in Australia this trip? When did you arrive?
Well, I got here on Thursday.
Thursday. And I assume you've had a bunch of Aussie beers, right? Is that...
Yeah, pretty decent amount.
Excellent. What's been your pick so far? If you could make a pick,
the Nomad beers are my favorite.
Such a suck up.
And if Johnny wasn't in the room, what would you say?
I mean, Brooks and I go back like 4 years. And he's just such a nice guy. And, you know, what Nomad is doing, too, is just, it's a little bit different. So for those of you who haven't had their beers yet, they have an interesting partnership going where it's a very almost artisanal, slow food, Italian-style approach to it, because half of the brewery is a partnership with Birra del Borgo. And they're sourcing a lot of indigenous plants and botanicals to brew beers like Australian craft beer with. So that's a pretty awesome craft beer approach where like you go out and you forage or you try to source native ingredients to make beers with. And that's a lot of the craft tradition. So like we try to do, like for instance, there's tons of New Zealand breweries who are doing American IPAs or you guys do American style pails. But in order to do that, you need to import American hops, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the true maturity of an industry is marked by when you develop a confidence in your own indigenous culture, and then you start to source local ingredients. Because it's like you become confident in your own craft. And a lot of the Australians I've been talking to is they say that you guys get your cues from the US and the UK. Is that?
Yeah, most definitely.
They say that the Australians, they don't set trends, they follow them. But Nomad is, in a lot of ways, they're setting a trend because they're being courageous enough to go out there and source these Australian ingredients and then brew beers with them. So it's pretty impressive.
I think it's also the Australian way that we need some people to come from overseas and fully utilize our Australian native ingredients to make us realize how fucking cool they are. So
you're also one of the few countries where you can grow barley and hops, where a lot of other countries they have to import one of the two.
Yeah.
And you know, the fact you could make 100% Australian beer here, the water, yeast, hops, and all could be sourced directly from the country.
Yeah.
We were talking about the economics of that earlier because it's more expensive to buy Australian malt than to buy European malt here, which is crazy.
Yeah.
But the economies of scale are such that they import so much more malt for the large producers here that it's more expensive.
Yeah. Dave, what are your thoughts on using imported ingredients versus...
Yeah, look, I think a lot of us do exactly do that. I mean, we've sort of grown up... I mean, I fell in love with beer in the US, so... the first thing we did is, well, certainly I did, and a lot of brewers that I know, is we tried to emulate those beers that we loved and sort of became the way that we brewed. We try and use as much... we certainly use Australian-based malt. There's certainly... I don't see any point in going elsewhere for that. And, you know, we're using Galaxy hops. We're starting to move across slowly as we... you're right. We just need to trust ourselves a little bit more. It'll be interesting to see, I think, whether the market, whether our hop growers could support something like that. We're only a very small... New Zealand's exactly the same. We're getting the same problem. A lot of our hops are going overseas in New Zealand as well. So whether we'd be able to support that, I think so. Hopefully it's growing at a rate that we would be down the track. So to answer your question, yeah, I love American beers, and I brew a lot of American-style beer, and I use a lot of American ingredients. We're changing slowly. We just brewed an IPA with 100% Australian ingredients, so wow. Thank God that was lucky.
And do you think style-wise, I think we've talked about this on the show, like, back in, like, the early 10s, you know, episode 3 or 4, but do you think there's a specific, like, Australian style, you think? Is there, like, one that we can call, you know, there is the American Pale Ale, that's... You know,
I mean, it's probably not going to be a popular answer, but they say Adelaide Sparkling Ale was developed here.
Cooper Sparkling.
That's the Australian pale. Yeah.
So that's an indigenous style that was created here. It has, you know, bottle conditioning and a proprietary flavor profile. So, you know, it'd be interesting to do that, but make like an Australian IPA with... bottle conditioning or can conditioning with all Australian ingredients. That would be pretty wicked.
Yeah, that would be pretty cool. Yeah. So I think the second beer is probably going to be coming out pretty. Oh, look at that!
Nice timing.
How's that for timing?
Oh man, I'm good. So this is the Yeasty Boys Gunna Matter. It's have you had this before, Shane?
No, I have not.
Okay.
What about in the crowd? Hands up. Who hasn't had a Gunna Matter before? That guy.
This guy.
Speaking of Gunna Matter.
Look at that.
Hello. Can we get one as well?
Yeah, of course.
We're just on our way to an event and thought we'd pop in and... And I heard Gunna Matter was the first word I heard when I came in the door.
Speak of the devil. So, if everyone turns around at the back of the room, we've got Stu from Yeasty Boys.
So give Stu a round of applause.
Hey.
And Sam as well.
And Sam.
And Sam's here as well. How are you going, boys?
Nice beard, Sam.
That beard is looking glorious, by the way.
There you go.
We've got a report on the colour of their pants, orange and purple. So, so that was we didn't plan this. That was pretty great.
Totally unexpected.
So the guys that just walked through, they were the Yeasty Boys who brew this beer, and this is their one of their most popular beers. It's the Gunna Matter IPA, which is an Earl Grey.
Tea leaf IPA. Yeah.
So it's got a big kind of bergamot Earl Grey flavour, which we at Sessionable love, and I'm pretty sure a lot of people in the audience do as well. But I'd be really interested to hear what you think about it, Shane.
I actually have had this beer.
That's good.
I didn't remember the name of it, though. And the funny thing is I had it on cask. I didn't have it.
Oh, okay.
Where was that?
It was actually in the UK, which is funny, is I was in the UK, and they were there too, and they had brewed a batch of this cask, and we had recently brewed a batch of cask beer as well. So that's where I had it, but I've never had the draft version before.
Awesome.
Yeah, this one's slightly different to the UK version. I think they use a different tea in the UK version, because they brewed it over there, and it was harder to get the tea.
You can't get tea in the UK.
Well, the story is actually a tea house in New Zealand did the blend of tea. So they designed the blend for it. So they went to another tea house in the UK to do that for the English version. What do you think about this, Dave? I mean, you've had this beer before.
I've had it many times. Is he in earshot?
I don't know. Yeah. I mean, we are mic'd up, so probably.
No, it's a stunning beer. I think it was it Gab's beer 2-3 years ago. You probably yeah it's.
One people's choice the year it was.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's something that UC Boys do incredibly well is think outside the square, and something that we would never have. I mean, personally, we're relatively safe the way we brew. We do a few crazy things every now and then, but he has the guts to go on and do something like this, and it really pays off. This is a stunning beer. The way that it integrates, that tea integrates with the hops is it's genius. Love it.
Nice one.
All right.
Speaking of IPAs, just a quick congratulations to Dave for winning the Best of Show for the 77.
Yeah, that's a bit of a shock, but it was pretty awesome.
At the Australian Beer Festival.
I think you might be the only person shocked.
Yeah, that was a big one. We had a pretty big weekend. I spent half the weekend. Australian Beer Festival is held in the Rocks Friday, Saturday, Sunday. But so I missed the first couple of days going to the Australian National Homebrewing Conference, which was a bit of a huge weekend for me, meeting some idols of mine like Vinny Chilozzo, and drinking Russian River while talking to Vinny was one of those moments. You're jealous yet? You should be.
Yes, pretty jealous.
Yeah. You don't have to rub it.
So that was great. And then I raced back from Canberra on yesterday morning and back to the festival to. I tell everyone I was serving beers. I wasn't. I was standing at the front drinking and talking to people. But
Gab was serving beers, wasn't
Gab
he?
Gab was serving beers. That's right. And we having a good old time serving the beers that we love. We had a couple. We had the 777 on as well as our standard beers and. Came to the time of the day where they announced the people's choice. Everyone votes. 5,000 people vote for their favourite beer, and the old workhorse, the 77, got up and won. Yeah, it was a real surprise.
Nice one.
And a really nice surprise.
Yeah, nice. That's probably a good segue into our next topic. So talking of beer festivals, we thought we'd do exactly that and just kind of have a chat about Sydney Craft Beer Week. We'd also love, you guys in the audience are more than welcome to put your hand up at any time. We've got some sessionable t-shirts.
That guy.
Don't be that guy.
So the best couple of questions will win sessionable t-shirts. I've got a few to give away.
So Shane, speaking of beer festivals, Brooklyn Paul was on very, is it on now or is it very recently? Were you there for that?
Yeah.
Is that your biggest festival for your home ground, or?
No, there's one in the summer that's a little bit bigger than that.
Okay, right.
Yeah. New York City's sort of largest festival for beer is New York Craft Beer Week, and the reason why is that there's more diversity of selection now in New York than maybe I think any other city on the planet. Our wholesaler alone has about 9,000 different varieties of beer.
Wow.
That's a lot of SKUs. So as a wholesaler, they have to manage that many SKUs in their warehouse.
We have a distributor in here who's just shaking his head.
No, what's funny is that they're the fourth largest wholesaler in New York.
Jesus
Christ.
There's
three others that are bigger than them, and their warehouse is about 180,000 square feet. So the largest one actually is so big that they need 6 separate warehouses in 5 boroughs.
Wow.
Queens, Staten, Bronx, Manhattan. And it's just staggering. The largest one, I think, sells about 40 to 50 million cases of beer a year. So you can imagine the selection and all the different trucks every day, just incoming and outgoing. It's just logistically, it's staggering.
And how do they go with stock rotation? Because, I mean, I imagine you want your beers serving quite fresh. And are you confident with the way that they handle that, or...?
Well, for us, it's... Yeah. I would be a little concerned if we were out of their, 300 or 400 brands, that if we were number, 295, we would be way down the list. And you never know, is it being properly rotated or is it collecting dust in the back of the warehouse? But ours is got enough pull on it that it's not an issue.
Awesome.
Right. And are there any other kind of festivals in the States that you maybe look forward to? Like, what are your...
What's your favorite festival?
Favorite, yeah.
So, because the U.S. is sort of the birth of the craft beer scene, over the past 30 years, there have been several legendary fests. And all of them, what they all share in common is they all started out with not the intention of becoming big. They had very humble beginnings. And so one of them is this event called Dark Lord Day, which used to just be a couple dozen geeks showing up for beer. Now it's turned into maybe, you know, several thousand and 10,000 people who get together and do bottle shares and smoke weed in the parking lot and all that kind of stuff.
That's what it's all about.
So I don't know if you know that, if you're familiar with this brand, it's called Brewery Omegang. They have an event called Belgian Kunst in Cooperstown. And they have this amazing brewery in upstate New York on a farm. So all of the brewers in the region go up there, and they bring like their tents and camping equipment, and we camp out for several days. And it's just a massive party on a big farm in upstate rural New York.
So it's like a bush dorf, but for craft beer.
Yeah, it's like Woodstock for beer.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know. I've seen when you get three brewers in the same room in Sydney and it gets pretty loose. Imagine out with tents out by a brewery. That would be pretty insane.
Then you have one other one is this one called The Great Taste of the Midwest. That would be the third one I'd recommend.
Yeah. Right, that sounds... Yeah, they all sound pretty awesome. What about you, Dave? What's you were over in New Zealand recently, were you? Is that...
Yeah, I think I saw you there as well, Dave.
Apparently I was in New Zealand.
You don't remember it?
Or... You loaded this one up, didn't you?
Just remember your wife's in the room.
So. Yeah. So, Beervana is... Garage Project's great. So Beervana is, everyone knows what Beervana is. It's probably the premier beer festival in Wellington in New Zealand, and it's a great event. I went to Wellington during Beervana, and no, I did not get to Beervana. I admit it. Didn't get there.
Wow, you were in Wellington. You were the road to Beervana, but not Beervana. Is that...
Yeah. Well, look, it was a holiday. I just had to get out of the brewery, to be honest. But it's, too hard too soon. I admit it.
What did you do?
I had a few beers.
I think one of the best bits about Beervana is like everything that's happening outside of Beervana anyway.
I think everyone's
just hanging out at the malt house or whatever.
And you find that with most good beer festivals, whether it be something like Good Beer Week, Sydney Craft Beer Week, what's happening around the actual event itself is often just as good, if not better, than the festival itself. Yep. I wouldn't say that about Beervana. I really did want to go, but I just didn't quite make it.
All right.
Did you know that? You knew that.
I don't think you did.
I don't think I did, no.
I thought it was a loaded question.
No, I'm trying to be nice to you.
Yeah. Just, you know. You're not doing a good job.
No, Adrian put in the notes, say, ask about Beervana.
Oh, yeah, no, that was my fault. Yeah, sorry. How's your craft beer week so far, and what have you got planned?
Whoa, it's a good question. As I said before, it's been pretty hectic so far. It involved a little bit of Australian National Home Brewing Conference, the festival, the Australian Beer Festival over the weekend. My favourite event, which we're just partaking in right now.
Thank you.
And later on this evening, we're launching one of our new beers at Frankie's. See you all there. How was it, by the way?
Fantastic.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Nice. We brewed a Russian Imperial Stout infused with coffee, chocolate, chili, and sour raspberries.
And a kitchen sink.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was a really challenging beer to brew, but loved every second of it, but it was a challenge. And we brewed it a couple of months ago now, obviously a big beer, it's about 10%, so need a bit of time to come into its own. I think it's hopefully... We'll find out later on. Is drinking really well right now. So that's later on. That's only Monday, right? Yeah.
was that one Jordan's idea?
It was Jordan.
It sounds like a Jordan idea.
I love Jordan, as we all do, and it's called the Gout Stout. So it was. So it was a stout with as many unhealthy things as we could put into it without being stupid. So that's released later tonight.
So that's your second like big dark beer.
Yeah,
quite look, recently, right?
It is, and it's something we again, it's getting out of that comfort zone. We were known for our big hoppy beers from the beginning, and it's, I mean, it's certainly my favourite type of beer. But I love big, you know, big stouts, and so yeah, we about 6 months ago we made the decision. Well, you know, let's do some stuff we really want to do. Let's you know, it's a stressful environment we work in. We need to have a little bit of fun. So. We released a barrel-aged Imperial Stout, which some people may have had. It's been pretty rare to find.
Your Suburban was fucking awesome. Yes,
yeah, it was. It was our first barrel-aged as well. So, nice. You know, we've started to dabble in that. It's something I think we did pretty well for our first go.
That was awesome.
And the Gout Stout. So, pretty similar beer to the Yeast Suburban. And, yeah, we thought with a beer... both for Frankie's and for Sydney Craft, but he's got to be a little bit left of centre. So we chucked some stuff in there and
needs to be
had
big.
Some fun. It needs to be big. So, yeah, I can't wait to taste that later. But that's just... that's Monday, so there's a whole lot
what's
more. I won't take you every day that's all the way through to the
is
end of next
day
weekend.
Day three
but
or day four? What is it, day three?
It's, yeah, it's day three or four. Day four
day
it is.
Four?
So
I don't even
Benny,
know anymore, really.
I have to ask every morning. I ask Benny, most of you know Benny, my sales guy. Yeah, I have to ask, where am I going today? So, because the trouble with Sydney Craft Beer Week is you've got to work as well.
Yeah.
When we go to Melbourne, we can have a holiday and we go to events and get drunk,
this,
wake up at lunchtime. But I got to be at work at 5 a.m. I mean, it's fucking hell.
All right.
So you get an hour's sleep then.
Yeah. So we're going to, we got a question.
Awesome.
So just say your name and,
your star sign.
Do I have to? So my name's Bronwyn. I don't need to disclose which member of the podcast I'm attached to, hopefully, but...
Is it Tom?
No.
So just as we're drinking a Tea Leaf IPA and talking about a beer brewed with Frankie's, it sounds like it's got a lot of extra ingredients. If money were no option, brewers, what would you like to brew with?
Gold Flakes.
Yeah?
Goldschlager.
A Goldschlager lager? Is that...
Gold lager.
Yeah, gold.
Yeah, awesome.
Yeah. And Forex gold, Dave, gold lager. Well, can you top that?
Yeah, Dave, what can you do?
Well, I've got to say, when you're adding things like raspberries into beer, it's amazing how much you actually have to use for it to fit. These were sour raspberries, so to get that into the beer and into a finished beer and a 10% beer at that, you've got to use a shitload of it. And then you don't exactly just go down to the fruit store and buy these things and throw them in, so... It was an expensive beer to brew. We don't make money on this beer, and it's a very expensive beer. So, what would I want to put into a beer? We kind of did what we want to do. I'm a massive, from my background, you know, as a home brewer, I love brewing, and that's why I do what I do. I also love coffee, and I love chocolate, and it was kind of one of those beers for me to chuck in all those things that I love, particularly the coffee. We worked with a local coffee roaster to the blend that worked and all that kind of stuff. So. Yeah, we're there, but what else would I want to add? Yeah, Gold Flakes. I'm going to go with that.
That's pimp it.
Just because we can.
Yeah. Maybe that should be the collab brew, right?
Plutonium Flakes.
Plutonium Flakes, Morgan?
It's more expensive than gold.
Yeah, sure. More expensive.
Highly toxic, but there he is.
All right. We got another question? Is that... Yep.
Shane, you were talking about, you know, the colossal amount of units that the distributor was shifting. I just wondered how you sort of handled the economy to scale in terms of keeping your craft roots and being able to ship that amount of beer and maintaining the quality. So obviously you've got a huge amount of people to service in America. You're now shipping internationally as well. You know, how do you manage to do that? And then the second part is, Dave, you know, how are you fulfilling your quota at the moment in terms of ramping up, and what are your plans for expanding as well?
Awesome question, man.
All right, so we'll go to Shane first.
I think craft is not a function of output or in terms of barrelage. It's more of a function of your mindset and your approach. So we're probably more of a craft brewer now than when we even started, because we go really deep now into the quality control of what we do. And, you know, a lot of times as you grow, the temptation is to lose touch with your roots. But, you know, like being at an event like this and talking to people on the very, like, on the, you're on the ground floor, so to speak. You know what I mean? You get to really get to see what people think about beer. And this is really the birth of the genesis of the Australian craft beer movement, what I'm seeing. Like, it's just starting and it's just incubating. So I feel that we're just, you got to be connected, you got to stay close, as a couple of Brooklyn hip-hop stars say. You gotta stay close to the people, you know, because it's funny, you mentioned earlier that article, but, you know,
what article?
Here we go.
Well, everyone wants to elevate beer, which is great, because beer is an amazing beverage. But if you elevate it too much, you start to alienate people and the reason why they love beer, which is it's this accessible beverage that is fun to drink and tasty and all that stuff. So if you make it too fancy, then you start to annoy people. So you can do something elegantly and simply and without being arrogant about it, you know what I mean? Just fucking slay it with the crap, man. Just bring it in and just
nice.
Slay it.
Just full beast mode. Yeah.
So the article that we were talking about was the recent article by David Chang, the chef behind Momofuku, where he expresses his love for shit beer and his disdain for craft beer aficionados and craft beer nerds and snobs and stuff.
There's a backstory to that. My friend is his author and his publicist, right? So I've known this guy for a long time. I knew him when he had he used to have a noodle shop in the East Village that no one would go to. It was just, you go in there, there'd be 25% full, right? And he was struggling. And he has a brilliant publicist now, and they did that article intentionally to be inflammatory. They wanted it to be controversial.
Yeah, and it worked.
And we're talking about it.
Yeah, it worked.
The other side of the world.
So that's the irony is they won because they wanted people to get up in arms about the article.
Yeah.
And here we are talking about the article, so it worked.
I think there were a few great responses to the article. There was one by Yeppie from Evil Twin, I think. I've got it up here. My name is Yeppie, and I hate Asian fusion food.
That's great.
Which is great. And then the other great one I thought was Garrett Oliver, also from Brooklyn Brewery, had a great response to it. So I'll put both of those links in the show notes, because that is a thing that exists. Yeah. We've got another question. Here we go, question.
I've actually got a question for the regular panel.
Right.
Sorry to the guests, but you're clearly doing this to, like, meet your hero brewers.
Pretty much.
Basically.
Yes.
So for the three of you, who's the brewer that you haven't had on the show yet that you really, really want to meet? Like, who do you want to get down here?
For me, it'd be Mikkel.
No, I was going to say the same thing.
Yeah. hands down, Mikkel.
I'd also love, I think, there's a list, a big list I've got in my head.
I thought there would.
Yeah.
It's on his laptop as well, by the way.
Mikkel's way up there. I think the guys from Brewdog, James and Martin, if that was possible. I think Sam Calagione from Dogfish Head. Those are guys that I just love to have a chat with over beer. And, you know, if we could record it and put it out for you guys, even better.
I think my second would be the dude from Canteon.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, Jean Van Roy.
What about you, Adrian?
I was actually going to say Sean Sherlock, formerly of Murray's now. Apparently he's leaving. And also Ferrell's Brendan Varis.
Would
be good.
All right, make it happen then.
I was also thinking Eric Angus, maybe. He hasn't been on the show before.
Well, that sounds exciting.
Yeah. Do you want to come for that one, Dave?
No. We just fight and yell at each other.
Yeah, that's good radio. But...
Yeah, who would you want to meet, Shane?
Well, all the ones that you mentioned I already know and hung out with. So yeah. the one
way to rub it in. Yeah.
There's a guy. There's a guy that he's not known because he has such a small operation, but the quality of his beers are just so phenomenal that It's unbelievable. So he runs this true nano brewery in Bend, Oregon. It's called Ale Apothecary. And it's in his house.
Wow.
So he's got a wife and two kids, and then connected to his house is this, well, it's like a shed. It's not really like a garage. It's almost just like a detached little barn, so to speak.
Is it like a tasting room or?
No, it's a production little room, but it's only about 800 square feet. And he produces spontaneously fermented beers.
Wow.
And they're phenomenal. Like, it's better than Cantillon. It's better than Crooked Stave.
Wow, that's a big call, man. Big call. Yeah.
Oh, man, I'll get my hand on some of this stuff.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
And so it's such a small production that what he does, this is hilarious. So he sells it online, and he'll announce it through email, like, oh, I have another, 200 bottles ready for sale. So he puts it on, and 2 minutes later, they're all gone, And I drove out there to hang out with him and introduce him to a friend of mine. And he's one of these guys. He's really eccentric, but he's like, as long as you're coming out, can you pick up a barrel for me? Because I need a barrel to age some beers in. I say, yeah, no problem. Because he doesn't take visitors, so... So he gives me the address of the place to pick up the barrel. And I didn't check it until the day before I left. It was 3 hours out of the way. So I didn't want to say no.
Because you want some beer.
Yeah. But I feel like he owes me now. So maybe I could get him to come on.
Yeah,
the show,
whenever he's in Sydney. And what about you, Dave? Are there any beer heroes that you want to meet that you haven't?
Well, you mentioned Vinny.
I was going to say, yeah, up until about 2 days ago, certainly ticked that one off the bucket list. It changes for me on a fairly monthly basis. The beers that I'm loving, the beers that I'm drinking, and who I want to meet, and all that kind of stuff. But Vinny's always been up there for me. It is I'm not sure. Nicole, my lovely, beautiful wife at the back there. Yeah. And, being invited to go down and present down at the brewing conference and meeting him, I was pretty weak at the knees, I got to say. So it was, but the one thing that I have found with, I still feel like a home brewer. I'm young in this industry and I'm amongst royalty often and, always, it's a bit of a spin out for me, but, these guys are just awesome, fucking awesome guys, right? Like Vinny Chilozzo, his wife. They're just gala people. They're everyday guys. I think he's much nicer than I am, but I could rattle off a list. Definitely Cantillon. I mean, yeah, absolutely. Now I've got a new one now. So we'll. I should have written that down as well. I'll get the name from you later.
Okay, I think we got another question.
Hi guys, I'm Beth.
Hey Beth.
You talk about 3 hours going out of your way to pick up some beers. I'm just wondering for the panel, is that a record or has someone gone further to get a specific beer?
Well, to be clear, I was going to his place.
So you went 3 hours out your way?
Out of the direction to his place because he requested me to pick up a barrel, a wood barrel, which he was aging beers in. he needed from a specific wine producer.
Okay.
But yeah, has anyone gone more than 3 hours out of their way for the sake of beer?
Yeah, last time when I was in South
Australia... We've had this with quite a few people in the audience, yeah?
When I was in South Australia, I kind of convinced Bron to drive 3 hours out of the way to go to a cidery to get some cider. Didn't really tell her before we left how far away it was, by the way.
I think 3 hours out of the way...
In Australia, 3 hours out of the way is a fucking long way, by the way.
Yeah. Well, because everything's so far away that everything's already, 3 hours away. So to go 3 hours out of the way above that, that's... Yeah.
I think when I visited Belgium, I went to Cantillon, which isn't really out of the way, but I'm bad with directions, so...
It probably
took me 3 hours to get there.
I think we have another question, Lee. Is that...
Howdy, Regan from Sydney. First time, long time listener, first time caller. Yeah. We got two brewers from two different countries with massively different taxation, government regulation sort of systems. America's got the three-tier system, which sort of adds a layer between the brewer and the customer. And Australia just has massive taxes. Do you ever look at each other and think, I wish I was the other guy, or I wish I had that aspect but not this aspect? Do you think about it, or is it just a non-issue?
It's a good question. I think it's one of those cases where the grass is greener, because I would love to have the ability to sell direct to my customers and also maybe operate a few venues. But what I've learned in the UK and here is that you just have no access to market. I mean, we have independent wholesalers in the US. I have dozens or hundreds of them that I can choose from. And you just don't have that here because the big brewers bought up all the bars and bought up all the taps.
Yeah.
So.
And what about you, Dave? Do you ever...
I knew it. You timed that so well, by the way.
As soon as I took a bite, I knew you were going to say that.
And I'm trying to be nice as well. Yeah. All right, I'm going to take a bite. Yeah.
Look, from a tax perspective, this has been done to death. It's we've got some big challenges on our hands. It takes a big chunk of our profits, particularly as a wholesaler. The other thing is, yes, we have access to the customer directly, and I think that's something that... certainly a lot of Sydney breweries have latched onto pretty quickly, is that, yeah, we can sell to our customer directly. They do want to come down to the brewery and interact with us directly, and we're starting to take advantage of that, which has been great. I think the other thing that I'm coming to grips with now is that being a brewer and a wholesale brewer and being at the back of a brewery brewing beer is very different to dealing with a customer as well. And so, yeah, there's something we're grappling with at the moment. We do a very, very, literally 8 hours a week of cellar door just to get some beer out there, some growler fills, some bottled stock. And that's awesome, but I don't think that's what we do. And so we need to make a decision. Do I have a separate outlet to be that and run by someone completely different, or even to somebody that we bring in to run the cellar door? And because it's such a different thing. They're two completely different businesses and run by very different people. So that's something we're really grappling with at the moment.
That's a really good point. What about you, Shane? Do you feel that you get with your system in the States, so you get a good one-on-one interaction with your customers and with people who are buying your beers?
No.
Are you able to, or is that the system that doesn't let that happen?
The system prohibits it, and here's why. In many states, including our own, like if you wanted to come visit Six Point Brewery, you couldn't actually come there and buy beer to take home with you, which is it's absurd. Right?
Yeah.
If you wanted to buy beer, I'd have to direct you to a licensed retailer or wholesaler, because the law says that we have to go through this middle tier. So this middle tier, which we call the wholesaler, you can see why they would be very reluctant to have any change in the law. Mm.
Well, they're winning, aren't they? They're doing very well.
Right now, wholesalers have been the most profitable they've ever been in the history of the business, because they already had the infrastructure in place, but now they're selling craft beers, which they make an enormous amount of profit on, right? So what they did is they lobbied all of the state legislatures in the United States. So I don't know how much you know about American politics, but basically every single state has its own laws. So in every single state, the wholesalers created a lobby, and then they went to the legislature and they made them pass these laws which prohibit brewers from exiting their distribution agreements. So now they have an iron grip on you, and it's becoming a big issue in the U.S. Brewers Association. But here's the interesting thing. The Brewers Association used to have 1,300 members, right? Now they have 4,000, and they have massive clout. So as a group, we're incredibly well organized. And brewers, like, we're friends and colleagues, much like, you know, I'm sure the Australian brewers are. So when we get together, if we want to fight this bullshit lobby that they put together, we can fight it and overturn it. And we successfully did it in two states, including New York.
Last one.
So here's an interesting analog. The same exact fight right now is occurring in the car industry. There's a company called Tesla Motors, and what they want to do is they want to sell their cars, their electric cars, directly to the consumer. Well, you can't in a lot of states because the car dealerships passed laws that make it illegal for a car manufacturer to sell their car to a customer. So, which is crazy, right? And the reason why is because the distributors, the car distributors, don't want them to circumvent their business. So that battle is taking place at the same time that the craft brewers battle is. It's essentially the same argument. We live in a time when manufacturers or producers want to sell direct to their customers. And now that we have the internet, if you want to find out about our beer, you just go online or you find out about it or reach out to us through social media.
Yeah, because your guys are doing all the work and they're the ones making the money, basically.
It's a hidden tax.
Yeah, definitely.
It's actually a hidden tax, which is funny because you guys complain about you have such high taxes on beer. We have a hidden tax, and that hidden tax is we have to sell through an entity that's a fulfillment service. You know, actually, some of the bigger brewers did a study on this, that instead of using the wholesaler, they were thinking about using UPS or FedEx. Because if you think about it, they have a logistical system set in place. They already have all the trucks, right? So why not just ship to one of their depots and have them make the deliveries? Because they're going to these places every day anyway, so.
They'll probably do it faster as well.
And get better service.
When FedEx is cheaper,
I think we've got another question down the back there.
Yeah, just a follow-up question on kind of licensing and getting to create a brewery. I think in New South Wales, it's harder to get a license than in any other state. In Victoria, it takes like a web form online and you pay your money online. Here, it's an extremely long process. So just wanted to know what it was like for you, Dave. I don't think I've ever asked you that question. And how hard is it to set up a brewery in New York? Is there a lot of loopholes you have to jump through? Because here, it's very difficult.
Yeah. It used to be hard. It got a little bit easier recently. But there's about a 9-month waiting period. It'll cost you about $10,000 in application fees and attorneys.
Not so bad after all.
The other thing about this, that the hardest thing is you can't apply unless you have a space, right? But it takes 9 months for the application to go through, right? So you got to pay 9 months rent where you can't make
it. Wow.
Which, if you're out in the middle of nowhere, it doesn't matter. But in New York, your monthly rent, it'll be $15,000 a month. So you got to add that into your...
That's a very significant investment just to get a brewery that you hope will get approved.
Yeah, it's rare that it gets denied, but you're already a couple grand, $100,000 in the hole by the time you open it.
That's huge, yeah.
And what about you, Dave? How do you find it?
Look, I agree. I think that's the one thing when I think with any business, but certainly with breweries, is that, we think about the cost of the brew house, we think about the cost of employees, and we think about all those costs. But we have the same issue here we've got three levels of government that we need to work with. We've got the federal guys at excise. They're easy because they're going to take shitloads of money from you, so they make it really easy for you. There's a lot of paperwork, don't get me wrong. They want to know everything that's going on in your business, and they want to make sure that you're not missing anything so they don't miss out on a dollar. But they really coach you through it, which is really good. So that's kind of good, kind of. The liquor licensing laws in New South Wales, I think, have become a little bit more relaxed. I won't say that was difficult. It certainly wasn't expensive as 10 grand. I think the problem for us and the problem for a lot of breweries, not so much now but a few years ago, is working with a council that has never been through the process before of approving a brewery. So, and it's not because they're being anything, they just don't know. And when a councillor doesn't know something, they say no. And then you've got to show them why they need to say yes for that particular point. So you go through this process, and every point takes a few weeks. And so we were approved in, funny enough, 9 months, which was pretty good for us a few years back. So
were you the first brewery in the Parramatta Council?
For about 150 years.
So we'll go with yes,
there.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think any of the
So there was nobody left in the bloody council who had been through it before. So council is usually the issue. I mean, that's why you see breweries now, it's kind of like, you know,
like Marrickville and
Marrickville, yeah. Right? So it's kind of like, you know, you've got this area where the council is fully on board. They know exactly what they need to do, and they get to a point where, yep, you need, you know, you've missed this, and bang, tick, 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 away you go. So for us, it was a real education process with the council over a period of time, and we were learning as well. So it was kind of, you know, I think a lot of the money we spent was not so much with the government, but with getting experts. To,
it's like because, water waste and
everything from effluent to whatever it is, because yeah. The council says, well, we don't know what's going to come out of a brewery. You know, is the water going to be tainted? Is it going to stink? Is it going to, you know, they don't know. So until you can prove to us, and we don't believe you because you don't know what you're talking about. So you need to hire consultants to come in who know what they're talking about to show them, and that's where a lot of our money goes, to those sort of consultants to hire them to prove to government.
So since you've broken that ground, how happy would you be for some new breweries to start in your area?
Oh, look, I'd love to see more breweries out where we are.
Yeah.
We're in a bit of a wasteland still. We're getting there. Where we are, Australia might be 3-4% craft beer, but where we are, it's point something. So, which is great.
Yeah, but that one point is Riverside.
And that, they all come to us, which is great. And we love the education process. We love getting somebody down. Every day somebody walks into the brew house and says, what have you got that tastes like super dry? Every day. I remember when it first started to happen, we sort of, oh, God, here we go. And it's like, well, hang on, whoa. I started a brewery in Parramatta because that's where I grew up and that's where I love to be and that's where it's going to be. And we took on that, you know, the responsibility of bringing across a lot of people to craft. And so we've converted a lot of people, there's still a long way to go. But it's part of what we do now, and we love it.
Awesome, yeah.
All right, we got another question.
I just wanted to highlight that Gypsy Brewing is something that is, you know, really growing in Sydney. So we're seeing these up-and-coming homebrewers who aren't able to get their own space, who are now brewing outside of other people's breweries. I'm just picking up on something that Shane said about needing to have a premises in order to start a brewing license in America. Is that something that effectively Gypsy Brewing is outlawed in the US, and that you just need to have your own brewery in order to be able to actually start brewing?
No, you apply for a different permit. So there's something which is called a brewer's notice, which is where you need a physical address. Then there's something called a contract brewer's permit. And then there's another one called an alternating proprietorship. So a gypsy brewer would choose one of the two latter ones, whereas a regular orthodox type brewer would choose the first one, which would require the physical address. You know, what's interesting is that I think gypsy brewing, it's going to be a global trend, because I got to go back to one of my favorite movies, Mad Max. Basically, if you look at the way the future is going, there's more and more scarce resources, right? There's more and more people on the planet, more and more people fighting over a limited amount of resources. So one of those resources is brewing capacity, right? And then access to ingredients like hops and stuff. So if you think about it, the most efficient system would be, is rather than, like, now there's 4,000 brewers in the U.S., rather than all 4,000 of them building factories, right, it would be more efficient for us to have strategically placed factories around the U.S. and we share productive capacity. Because the real, if you look at the trends across all different types of industries, the future is marked by collaboration and sharing resources and sharing networks. And so I actually think that's where it's at. And that's, I mean, here I am again with Nomad, but that's like part of the approach, is that here we have this facility, right? but it's not like this thing where it's all mine and I gotta protect what I have and more for me and less for you. It's like, no, it's, we have capacity and we have a network of people that we regard as part of the ecosystem of craft beer, and they all get to elevate the industry together. I mean, people said, two of the people on the panel here was like, oh, I'd like to have McKellar on the board. Dude, that guy faxes in a recipe, right? Yeah. So it's a classic example of where the reputation's out there as a brewer, but, you know, DeBroof is doing all the brewing.
Yeah. So we've got another question.
Hello. Just a quick question for the two brewers as well. Is there a beer that you've tried to create that hasn't really worked out, and what have you learned from that process?
Is there what?
A beer that you've tried to brew or create that hasn't really worked out?
Yeah, I mean, most of the beers that we make never even make it to commercial production. So we brew at least one new batch of beer a week.
Oh, wow.
We have three different brewing systems. We have a one barrel, a 15 barrel, and then a 500 barrel. So if it makes it off the one barrel, it'll get scaled up to the next one. And then if it makes success on there, then it might get scaled up to the full-size production system. So a lot of stuff never makes it past, never gets on first base, so to speak.
And how does that work? Does everyone in the brew house have a chance to put something forward for that pilot brew? Or?
Yeah. What happens is we have a tasting panel where we'll taste all the beers that are kind of in production. And if one of them kind of makes an impression, then it gets put into the, bumped up to the next step. But you know what's interesting about this? And this is the danger of quote-unquote focus groups. There have been times when, like, we'll taste a beer and we'll be like, oh, this is going to crush. This is such a good beer, right? And then we'll produce it and it doesn't really resonate. And then we have beers that we think aren't that impressive and they're just so embraced by the public.
Dave, did you have a point to that?
I'm just incredibly jealous of the systems that that I don't have now. But we... It's hard for us because we're at the point now where we're only 2 years in. We have a 2,000 litre brew house, which is a lot smaller than the 6-point production by a long shot. So we don't really have a pilot brewery, and we don't really have the capacity either. So we're flat out brewing our beers. And as I was saying before, about 6 months ago, we decided, well, you know what? There's a whole lot of stuff we want to try. And we kind of had to go straight to production with those beers because that's the only option we have. And so you've got to be pretty confident that it's going to work.
Did you even brew those on a homebrew scale, or that was just...
Not so much the beers. Certainly my the core six beers, absolutely. I mean,
I guess, Dave, what I'm saying is we would probably be doing that, but we can't afford... Like, if you brew a 500-barrel batch...
That's a big scale.
And you just hope, like, you're like, oh, this better work. If it doesn't, like, the impact it has on our...
It's a pretty shit month that doesn't work.
It's devastating. Yeah.
2,000 litres has a big impact on my bottom line. But it's I think, with the size of our companies, it's kind of the same kind of thing. So we don't take too many risks. We have, because we run an electric brew house, which has its pros and cons, but we can do small scale brews. So we've got a couple of 600 and 1,000 litre fermenters that we do those things in. And
was this beer made on the electric brew house?
Yes, it was.
This is phenomenal.
Well, thank you.
Nice.
We'll introduce the beer. So we're bringing around at the moment the Riverside 777, which. I'm sure many people in the room have had it. Hands up if you have never had the 777 before. We've got a few.
You lucky bastards.
Sorry, Liam.
You're experiencing this for the first time.
I've got to say, this batch of 777 is tasting amazing.
Well, this is my new baby.
Yeah.
Tell us about the name. How'd you get the name?
You kind of got to know where we have my... the brew that sort of made Riverside was the 77 IPA. Which is a single IPA. It's big enough, 7.7% IPA, which because we're not marketers, it was a 7.7% alcohol beer. We called it 77. get it, right? Yeah. So, yeah. So that was our IPA that really we became known for quite quickly. And again, that's why I was so chuffed over the weekend. It was one the beer of the festival was my old workhorse, the IPA. We were always going to brew a double IPA. We were always asked every other day, when are you brewing a double IPA? So we kind of waited a year or so until we... I'm a big believer in trying to get right what you're doing as a basis before you move on to your next level. So whilst we were releasing good beers when we first started, we had a little way to go. We're inexperienced, and let's concentrate on those beers first before we move to the next level. So about 6 or 12 months ago, we released. So that, again, just our beers are all numbered, and so as we brew the next level, that we've got the 777, which is the double IPA version. We have, I'm going to let a secret out of the bag here, but we have a 44 Amber, which is a beer that we're known for.
This sounds exciting.
Yeah, so we're looking at when I'm ready to release the double version of that, which will be the 444. So,
I think Tom's in love.
Oh yeah.
I'm in so much trouble.
This is probably on par with the point when Shane announced High Res at the local tap house. I think Tom's excitement levels is pretty on par.
Pretty similar, yeah. That was pretty
excellent.
Yeah, sure.
That was at our launch last year. That was a fun night.
That was a very loose night. I don't know about you. You looked as happy as about the rest of us, though.
It was 1 a.m. in the morning, and I had just gotten back from the pub. By the way, as I drink your beer here, you know, I was just talking with Johnny on the way over here about how, you know, different beers, like when you're in Europe, the beer is more designed to go with food, and especially at the artisanal breweries. But, you know, Johnny, you're drinking this one right now too. Doesn't this remind you of like an Amaro? You know, it has like, if you've ever been to Italy or if you ever go to Mari, it's like, it's sweet and bitter at the same time, but it has this botanical element to it, like herbs. That's what this reminds me of, cold. You have this right after dinner, you know, it'd just be like nice, great.
I would have this before, during, and after dinner and be quite happy.
I'll have this as my dinner.
Yeah.
So what is everyone thinking in the audience about this one? Is it thumbs up all around? I don't know what expected there.
When I first had one of these today, of this batch, I was quite surprised about how pungent the tropical notes were in this batch. Is that a slight recipe change or...?
No, it's not. It's more of a process change. I was a bit unhappy. Everybody has loved the 777, which is great, but as a brewer, you're never happy with... Well, certainly I'm never happy with where my... I always want to improve. So the aroma of this beer in the last batch for me wasn't as good as it could be. Just really working on the dry hopping technique of this beer to ensure we're getting...
Yeah.
And what are the different blends of hops that you're working with to improve?
Which blends of hops?
Are you bringing in American hops for this? Or
So this is all American. So we're using a fair bit of Mosaic in this. So a new hop for me, certainly, which I've worked for a little bit over the last... We've sneaked into a few of my seasonal releases over the last year as I've worked with it. Pretty tough hop to work with. I use a lot of Amarillo, which most people would know if they know me. So there's Amarillo in there and Simcoe. So... I found the first batch that we brewed of this beer. Mosaic caught me off guard. We used a little too much of it, so we backed that a little to the batch before this, and I was very happy with the hop, how much of each hops we had, but really just working on getting the dry hopping right, when we dry hopped, how many times we dry hopped. How far through fermentation, how much past fermentation, warm, cold. There's a whole lot of things. Dry hopping, as a home brewer, for me, was throwing hops into a fermenter and hoping that it got aroma. But as a professional brewer, there's so many variables to dry hopping. And again, back to that guy called Vinny that I mentioned earlier, I spent a lot of time with him over the weekend talking about the different methods in the States that people are using now to dry hop their beer. Trying to get oxygen out of the hops, all sorts of different things. It's there's so many ways to do everything, but even dry hopping has a lot of different processes. So I think I'm really happy with this one. really happy.
As you should be.
Thank you.
Fucking delicious.
I think the best thing about a beer like 777 for us in Australia is it's a really perfect example of that West Coast style of double IPA, is that by the time they come out here, aren't tasting as good and as pungent as this. So I don't know what you think, Shane, but I think this is really exciting to have a beer this vibrant and punchy as a double IPA tasting fresh. That it's not something we always get the chance to have over here.
To me, it tastes like an IPA that's probably been kegged within the past 3 weeks. Maybe in the past two weeks or ten days.
Yeah, it's about two weeks. So. Well done.
Wow. Because the first thing when I smelled it, I was like, there's got to be some Simcoe hops in there.
Yes.
Simcoe has the... Well, now I'm rambling. So
no, go on. We're all excited. Go.
Simcoe... So I spend a lot of time... I basically now live almost half the time on the West Coast and half the time Brooklyn because I've been working really closely with hop farms. And there's about 6 farms in all of the United States that produce Simcoe. And there's 1 out of the 6 that, in my opinion, is best. Meaning their Simcoe hops are just phenomenal, right? So here's a little interesting anecdote about Simcoe. Hops are generally ripe and ready for harvest for about 7 to 10 days, right? But what's interesting is at the beginning of their cycle, if you pick them, they taste remarkably different than at the end, right? So when you pick Simcoe hops in the very beginning of the ripeness, they're intensely fruity, and it tastes kind of like passion fruit or guava, very intense, almost mango, right? When you pick them at the end, they develop this really dank, sulfuric note to them.
Yep.
And what's interesting is some brewers want that really kind of dank or herbal character to it. And sometimes it even gets like a little bit garlicky. It's really...
Often referred to as cat's pee as well. Yeah.
It's completely transformative. Yeah, but some brewers, they'll intentionally tell the hop grower that they want all of their hops picked at the very end because they want that really nasty, sulfuric flavor to it. And what I taste in this is like the ones that are picked in the beginning, which in my opinion are better and just more pleasant. But there's a very famous brewer in the U.S. who demands that all of their hops are picked at the very end, which is good because then they pick all the late hops and we get all the early.
You get more fresh ones for yourself. Yeah. Do you get any sort of level of quality like that?
Cascade is a hop that it's reversed. So in the beginning of the harvest, it's intense, like it tastes like pine, and it's really kind of a dank pine flavor. And then at the very end, it tastes like grapefruit. So we usually wait until the end of the harvest for that one.
So, Dave, can you talk us through how you pick your hops, or is it...
Did you pick all the hops yourself?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Do you have that kind of luxury, or do you pretty much just buy whatever from the distributor?
It's kind of halfway in between. We certainly don't have that level of input by any stretch of the imagination. I mean, I'd love to, but we don't. And we have a couple of suppliers here that we use, and we rely heavily on those guys who do go to travel to the States to buy the hops and develop those hop contracts. So, nowhere near. And I wish we did, because we do get a variability in... Now, Cascade's a perfect example. The variability in Cascade between... with the same... Well, for us, is a supplier, which essentially is a middleman. I get a lot of difference between batches, so, and we don't really know where they're coming from. We kind of know the farm. We know the farm where they're coming from, but certainly not to that level of, is it early or late? Absolutely not. I'd love to, though.
All right, let's just take a break here. Some pizzas just come out, so we'll let you guys and, more importantly, us eat.
Ball.
So, Shane, why don't you tell us what the Otis is we're drinking tonight? What style of beer is it?
This is an American-style oatmeal stout. It's about 6.5% ABV, brewed with flaked oats and four different types of American hops. So if you like good stout, which is so good.
You know, pretty toasty.
Well, when you add oats to a stout, you can't really taste them as much as you can feel them. But it changes the mouthfeel of the beer. It makes it nice texture.
Well, Otis does have a massive, like almost like a honey-like mouthfeel. It's very viscous, isn't it?
There you go.
I know. What do you guys think at the back? You got some Otis back there. Where has the mouthfeel going?
Yeah. So those who have it.
Are you chasing toast?
There you go.
Yeah, so Regan just said, yeah, when you lick the top of your mouth, it's nice and slick. We got a tasting note with Vegemite. Have you ever had Vegemite, Shane?
Yeah.
Yeah? What do you think of Vegemite?
I prefer an Otis.
I prefer an Otis as well.
Yeah, I prefer marmalade, but...
Oh, Marmite.
All right, so...
So would you classify this as like a sweeter style stout, or...?
It's funny, it tastes that way, but it's not laboratory-wise. Like, brewers measure the degree of how dry a beer is using a hydrometer. This actually has a very low finishing gravity. It tastes sweet, but it has like a 2.2...
They're up.
Final Play-Doh, what we call. So that means it's very dry.
Super light.
Yeah, that's definitely. Really I'm getting a lot of chocolate coming through in this as well.
That's beautiful.
I find it very, very roasty, very but silky smooth. It's, I had it a few months ago.
By the way, we intentionally keep the carbonation on this lower than typical. Because we often use it on a nitro pour, you might notice that it doesn't have as much gas as like a typical like lager or pale ale. So that helps more. CO2 actually numbs your palate. So the more gas you put in beer, the less you can perceive.
Wow, cool.
Flat beer you can taste better than carbonated beer.
Yeah, the Englishman in the audience giving us a thumbs up. So,
but you actually can't always smell it better because it doesn't lift the oil out of it.
So can you talk about, in general and in this beer in particular, the effect of nitro versus CO2?
Yeah, get really technical about it. CO2 has a slight charge to it, so it binds to... You can dissolve it in liquid, in solution. Nitrogen, you can't. So it wants to force itself out of solution. That's why it'll produce like that thick, creamy head on the beer. And the gas won't dissolve in it, so when you actually drink a beer that has nitrogen in it, you won't get the feeling on your tongue of having any gas in the beer because it doesn't dissolve. It's an inert gas. CO2 has a slight electrical charge in it, so it binds to the water that's in there. Real kind of nerdy stuff if you're into the industry. But that's the basic science behind sort of the effervescence of beer.
Right. I think we had another question. Here we go.
Yeah, hi. This is by Shane and Dave. You both use social media to look at and promote your beers. I think Dave mainly looks at passively to see what people think about his beer, and Shane uses it aggressively in terms of Untappd and badges and things. I was just wondering how you perceive social media in the beer space to help do what you do.
Yeah, I think it kind of starts with how much marketing budget we have, which is negative. But we find, and you've really got to figure out who your audience is and how you reach them and whatever else. So certainly the beer, for want of a better term, beer nerd audience and beer enthusiast audience are all on Facebook and Twitter and Untappd and all that great stuff. And they're a massive part of who drinks our beer. So we've really got to concentrate and make sure that we're letting them know what's going on. So Facebook is something we use a lot and have a lot of success with. Twitter, about half of that. And then Untappd for us, we certainly don't use it as a marketing medium at all, rightly or wrongly. But
do you use it as a market research sort of thing? That's
absolutely
feedback?
Yeah, I've been looking at it while we've been on the panel tonight, because as I say, when we release a new bit of market, even if it is just a small scale specialty like we have tonight, it's a fantastic way to get some feedback on your beer.
It's honest feedback as well.
It is honest feedback, and you kind of got to take it with a grain of salt as well, because I can't remember who it was, but I was having a conversation with someone earlier tonight about, you know, somebody may give your beer one star and all of a sudden you get a jolt and you go, whoa, what's gone wrong? But it's not a one star because it's a shit beer. It's a one star because it's not a beer for them. So with all those sorts of Untappd and all those types of rating type mechanisms, you've really got to, most of the people who use, you know, some people use them because where they should be and rate it as how quality the beer is, and some people rate them, well, one star because it's not my kind of beer. So you kind of got to take it with a grain of salt, but it is an awesome tool for feedback for us.
What do you think, Shane?
Well, so I don't know if any of you know who the guy Seth Godin is. So he's this guy who does a lot of stuff with marketing, but his whole thing is that you should stick to a medium that you have a core competency in. So, like, you just don't have the resources as a small business to do Facebook, Twitter, Untappd, run a Tumblr page. You know, there's so many different social media nowadays that you just don't have the capacity to manage all of them. So the best thing to do is kind of attach the reins to one that you feel that you have sort of an advantage in, right? And just the way that I see things developing is the world is getting more, it's in microblogs. So like people just don't have the time to sit down and write these big dissertations about what they're experiencing. So they like to do everything in 140 characters or less. It's like basically texting, right? So that's why I always felt Untappd was the perfect medium, because if you go out and you want to crush 3 or 4 beers, you just type the beer in, check into it, and enter the number of bottle caps that you want, and it archives it. So that, to me, when that came out, I'm like, wow, this is so much more efficient than Rate Beer or Beer Advocate. And sure enough, its user base has exponentially grown. It's a funny story that I met that guy. He lives in New York, the founder of it, and when he started it, and they were just doing it out of their apartment, and just the other day, we had like over 500,000 check-ins on our feed, which is just...
That's ridiculous.
Staggering.
Yeah, that's huge.
So it just shows like how...
I got excited when we got over 1,000.
It just goes to show, though, like how much that has blown up, because, you know, and the other media that we focus on two things as a company, because we ditched Facebook... ditching Twitter, and we're focusing almost exclusively on Untappd and Instagram. And the reason why is ever since we were founded as a company, we put a lot of emphasis on aesthetics, and Instagram is probably the best social media to instantly deliver something that's kind of eye candy for your customers. And Untappd, that's just my way of, that's like the conduit for the beer drinker. I mean, people all over the world, you're looking, it's like, oh, this dude from Australia, this person from the UK, guy in Chicago, you get to see what they're saying about the beer. And the best thing is when they start talking shit about your beer, I just start firing back. and then they'll say something like, well, who are you? And I'm like, well, I'm a dude who made...
Fucking Shane, bitch, right? Recognize.
Stop talking negative about our brand, man.
It's funny once you face them face to face that they kind of back off a little.
There's a very good book about that. It's called, I don't know if you ever, I'm getting rambly here, but there's a book called Raving Fans. Really good book. And this one dude got super negative on the beer, and it turned into this epic rant where all these people ganged in on it. And 26 different people on Untappd joined and just started going back and forth. And it culminated in I demanded that I get to talk to him and have a beer with him. Now, he lived in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. It was about 6 hours from New York.
So I bought a plane ticket the next day.
Nice.
I flew out there because he said he thought I wasn't serious. I was. I flew out there the next day. We met at a local pub, talked about it, right? And we took some photos and kind of turned it into this big media event. And it got picked up on Reddit, the microblogging site.
Yeah.
And it went totally viral, and it was pretty cool. But it just shows that if you're a consumer, you can get in touch with producers nowadays. You really are motivated. It's pretty easy.
Did he have any good points?
No, he was just talking shit. He was a nice guy, though. He was just getting a little bit overconfident on social media.
All right, so we had a bit of an idea of something to talk about. Recently, a couple of venues have opened up claiming to have, you know, the most taps, craft taps in their city. So in Melbourne, you've got the Foresters Beer Hall. Is that the one?
Yeah.
And then the Keg and Brew, which used to be known as the KB Hotel.
Now the KNB, confusingly.
Yeah. Well, actually, I really like that rebranding, but I don't know. And so they've got a whopping 30 taps, which we think is a lot, right?
It is a lot for Sydney, yeah.
It is a lot for Sydney.
Yeah, but 30 taps in a venue that has a license for 90 people is ridiculous. 75
people.
Bang.
Is it really that small? I didn't realise.
It is a small venue.
Wow. And yeah, what, Foresters had 50, did it?
50 taps?
Yep.
Yeah. So, I'd love to hear what both of you think, but Shane especially, because I'm sure 30 taps is nothing in the...
That's quite pitiful, right?
In the tapless dick measuring contest, it's really tiny, right?
Yeah, I mean, size matters, I guess. But, yeah.
Well, I always thought it's more how you use it. But,
you would think it's how much flows through it.
Oh. Oh, wow. You went there. You went there.
And your sister.
Anyway, all right, serious time. Serious time.
All right. So to bring it back to... Yeah. Sorry.
I mean, that's basically what I was going to say. So... All I can say is that don't... I hope Australia doesn't fall into that trap, because there's so many venues in the U.S. that they try to... Their whole marketing point is we have more taps than our competitor. It's not good. It's not good for the customer. It's not good for the beer. And here's how it usually works. A bar usually has 20 taps or 12. And a distributor or a brewer will come in and they'll say, you need more taps. And really what they meant to say is, we want you to put our beer on tap. We'll expand the selection for you. So what happens, though, is that the space is not designed to accommodate that many taps. So you have, you know, a place that holds 100 people that has 40 taps. And the worst thing about it is they usually don't have the walk-in cooler space in the basement. So when you don't have enough refrigerated storage, what happens is the kegs usually get stored outside of the cooler. Because bars, as you know, anyone who's worked in a bar, you don't just carry inventory for the beer that's on tap. You always need a backup. So if you have 40 taps, you usually need 80 kegs.
At least 80 kegs, yeah.
At least.
You need double the amount of taps that you have. So I've seen so many places over the years where they expand their taps, and then they have all this beer sitting out warm, right? And then there's always, anytime you have like 40 or 50 taps, there's always like one or two that no one wants to buy. So it just sits there and rots, right? And the line's dirty, and then, you know, it's not a good system. You're actually better off having a really well-curated list with a limited selection.
I think it's really refreshing to hear, because especially in Australia, we like read about these venues in the States that have like this enormous tap list, and we get envious about it, but then we don't hear this side of the story. Like, if no one buys that beer, it's going to turn in like a day or two.
Well, from a punter's perspective in Australia, where a venue like the two that you mentioned, we're on tap at both of those, and you get excited because you know you're going to get a tap. You might get two taps.
Yeah,
and
but then at the end of the day,
they don't order it for another 2 months.
Yeah, exactly.
Because they're not getting through the stock. And I think in Australia and in Sydney, we've got, you know, the craft beer market is much smaller.
I think we're too young for a 40 or 35 tap.
Even 20 taps, I think, is a bit too much at the moment. And it's about the maximum, I think, that we can handle as a market right now. Sydney or Melbourne.
The consumer goes there, though, and they think that they're getting a great value because of the selection, but you're getting really stale beer. In Australia, you have this weird system where the size of the keg gets taxed differently. So typically at these places that have like 60 taps, you would only put on what we call a six-hole, which is like a 20-liter keg, because you'll go through the keg quicker and it's fresher, right?
Yeah, makes sense.
You wouldn't do that here because your taxes are so disproportionate.
Well, yeah, you're being moved towards a 50-liter keg because
it's the same price.
Because 49.5 liters is the excise point. Like, yeah.
All right. I think we had a question from Derek.
Yeah. So this is another sort of random, non-completely beer-related question. In the States, when I go there, it's quite sort of ubiquitous. Wherever you go in a bar, there's TVs everywhere. So you can't sit down in a bar and see TVs without, like, seeing TVs, the sports channels and that sort of stuff. But I've noticed the last couple of times I've been there, some bars who I went to previously, the TVs are gone and it's just TV-free. It's like it's back to how it used to be, just people talking and drinking at bars.
Is this like the pokey-free thing?
Yeah,
exactly what I was thinking.
Noticeably in Philadelphia and some parts of like Venice Beach and places in L.A., I was wondering, like, your opinion, Shane, on if you think that's a good thing or a bad thing. I think bars where there are no TVs, where you can talk and be just talk with the punters, is way better socially than where you sit there and zombily stare at a TV screen. And whether or not you're noticing the same thing or it's just my random selections of bars, I've just been lucky.
No, you're spot on. But Americans are really terrified that they have to talk to each other. it's definitely a trend, too. And the other thing they're doing is they're gutting out a lot of the music. So they used to play... the two things were really loud TVs that were just surrounding you like Big Brother almost, you know, just everywhere. And the other thing was the service came up about 10 or 15 years ago in America where you would pay like $20 a month. And it would just play... There were like 50 different channels, and it would play the worst loops of music. And restaurants and bars all subscribed to it, so it was just an easy way to provide background noise. And if you ever worked in a place like that, though, you began to recognize every sound.
So you knew by the hour what was going to be on. You just want to shoot yourself in the face, yeah.
Yeah, and they're pulling all that out because people want authenticity. They don't want it. They don't want that anymore, so...
I think that's something we're fairly lucky that a lot of the great kind of bars in Sydney, at least that probably most of the people here go to, have great atmospheres. There's at the most like one TV that's only ever on for like certain things, or some bars don't even have TVs at all.
I like the weedy approach where they just have one TV they pull out the back like when there's something worth watching. Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
I do like having like being at a bar and there's no TV, so I can just focus on my phone and just tweet all the time.
Untapped and I think especially when you're traveling, when you can like walk up to a bar, sit at the bar and hold a conversation with someone you don't know, it's part of that whole experience of traveling and trying beers in a new place.
You don't have to watch the TV.
But if it's on, you're going to look at the TV. That's just the nature of it.
It is slightly distracting.
We've got one final question, and then we'll go on to our recommendations round and wrap it up. So this one is Brad's number 4. I'm disappointed.
You don't get a second shirt, Brad.
No. I've got my shirt. I'm fine. Yeah. I genuinely want to know, though. It's probably been...
take it back.
It's probably been about 12 months since you were last on the podcast, Dave, and you obviously told us about how the business was going then. Just wondered 12 months on how things are and what the future looks like, and you know, are you expanding? What's the deal? What's going on?
How has Sessionable helped you?
So the difference between business of a weekend, the Friday before and the Monday after was exactly the same. So it made no difference to our lives. Look, I think We could grow a lot quicker than we have. And
do you want to though?
Well, that's why we haven't. I think.
We did
grow quite quickly. We doubled our capacity twice in the first probably year and a half. And we could have kept that going. We could have, you know, quite, I wouldn't say exponential, but quite, you know, rapidly keep expanding and brew more beer and blah, blah, blah. But we made a decision, and I think you mentioned this a little bit. Let's just stop and focus a little bit on quality. We had a mishap. We had something that went out to market that wasn't right, and most people missed it, which is good. And it really was a shot in the arm for me to say, well, hang on, you're making beer that people want, and you can brew probably 3 to 4 times as much as you are, and people will buy it. But let's make sure that we're brewing beer that, you know, that we're going to be here in 10 years that people are going to still love. So we've made a conscious decision over the last few months to hang on. Let's just step back a little bit. We've introduced we're testing lab. We got lab tests on everything that we make now, which is pretty unusual in Australia, to be honest. It was something that we actually said, well, hang on, do we want to introduce a lab into our business and we'll do it? No, we don't have the capability to do that. So we've brought in a third party to we test everything that we brew, and just making sure we're getting good beer out there, and then we'll kick up to the next step. So next year, yes, absolutely. Next year is we're focused. We're still doing it. Yeah, we're looking forward to sometime during next year. We will need to move. As I said, we've doubled our capacity twice, and if anyone's been down the brewery, you'll laugh and look at how much stainless we've managed to squeeze in a very small space.
It's fucking crammed. Yeah.
So yeah, yes, we are going to grow and we are going to do that. But we've made a conscious decision just to stop for a minute, make sure that we've got our quality right, and then move to the next level. So and that was hard, you know, because we're essentially a production brewery, and you need scale to make money out of a production brewery. And so, yeah, everything my accountant says to me, you got to grow. Well, hang on, yeah, we got to grow, but we got to grow producing good beer. So it's a tough. It's so tempting just to, you know, in a market like this where craft here is growing so quickly, just to say, fuck it, let's just go for it. But you want to make sure. I want to know that in 2 years' time, when we double our size or maybe 4 times our size, that the beer is still as good as it is now. So yeah.
All right.
Be here.
So we're coming to the end of the formal podcast proceedings. We'll keep kicking on for a bit afterwards. But what we usually do at the end of our sessionable episodes is the recommendations round. And I realise that I probably should have warned our guests about this before we sat down. I never do.
I always forget about it. So
we don't think about it until this point in the episode. But I think what we'll do is, because we didn't warn our guests, maybe we'll do the 3 regular panelists first, and then we'll go to the guests in terms of the recommendation round. So,
bags last.
All right. Do you want to start, Adi, or I can start?
I'll do 2 recommendations for beer. One beer and 1 event. For the beer, I would recommend hunting out, and it's in a few places this week, the Watermelon Warhead by Feral Brewing.
Yep.
Still my favourite beer of all time. I think it's at the Tap House at the moment. We're tapping it in Camaray Craft soon. It's at Coleroy.
Where was that again?
Camaray Craft, 504 Miller Street in Camaray. Open 3 to 12 every day this week.
Shameless plug.
12 on weekends. You can get the 201 to 208 from Wynyard Park to get there. And my event recommendation, surprise, surprise, is at Camaray Craft. So it's not actually a beer event. It's a mead event. And we're matching 5 different meads with 5 different courses. I tried the meads earlier. I tried it last week. And
is this all from the Moonlight Meadery?
Yeah, Moonlight Meadery.
From the state, whereabouts in the States is Moonlight
New
from?
Hampshire. So,
have you heard of them, Shane?
Is that Michael Fairbrother?
Moonlight. Michael Fairbrother is coming by for the dinner.
Oh, so he's going to be there?
Yeah, it should be fun.
Yeah, he's in town.
Yeah, so I met him on the weekend?
I'll do my beer and Sydney Craft Beer Week event recommendations then. My beer recommendation is one, I don't know if Matt's still in the audience. He's gone. I was going to recommend the Hop Dog. I'm still going to recommend it. The Hop Dog Holy Snappin' Turtles. If anyone's had it yet, or
what is, style is that?
It's 100% Brett Wild Ale.
Nice.
And it's just
it. I can't categorize it. It's so weird.
But it's just also so tasty. You drink it and you're like, oh, I could drink so much of this. It tastes like, you know, 4 or 5%. And then you look at the bottle and it's 9.6%, and you're like, okay, I'm going home now. That's like, it is a killer, but it is absolutely just delicious. I had it at Spooning Goats and at Dimitri's Pizza. They both got it, and it's incredible. I definitely recommend trying that. And I'm going to recommend for my Craft Beer Week event, I'm going to be just as shameless as Adrian. I'm going to recommend on Thursday night, there's a feral tap takeover at Royal Albert Hotel.
Yeah, because that needs plugging.
Yeah, well, you know.
No one's going to that.
It's Tarantino-themed, and if you dress up as a Tarantino character and you're the best dressed, there's, I think, a $250 bar tab on the line, so...
I think Tom's dressing up as the bride.
I am. Yellow jumpsuit, blonde wig. That's me. that's my beer and my event recommendation. Throw it over to Liam, and then we'll go to our guests.
Yeah, well, for my beer recommendation, I just cracked the other day the Little Barinko 2014 Christmas Ale.
Oh, yum.
And if anyone had last year's Christmas Ale, which was fucking on point, this one is spectacular. They're releasing both at the moment, so you can do a side-by-side. And that's my pick. Get on it. Amazing.
Where can you get it?
The Welcome Hotel, according to the gentleman at the back there, has it on tap. Is that correct?
Tomorrow night,
BG. Oh, yeah, they got it on tap tomorrow night for their big in the station.
Not on tap.
They have it on bottles, which looks like a tap.
For God's sake, man.
Don't worry, I'll edit this out.
I told you, it's sessionable. You don't have to know what you're talking about. It's fine.
Can I get it at Camperdown Cellars?
Possibly, yes. Yes, you can.
You can possibly get it at Camperdown Cellars, is that? Yep.
Bring your ticket to get a discount.
Ooh. Oh, wait, that's a good deal.
Yeah, so my Craft Beer Week recommendation, I'm fucking pumped for the Gypsy Brewers event at Bitterfew, which is...
Sold out.
Looking sold amazing.
Out. Yeah.
So,
get on it if you
that's a pretty
can't.
Bad recommendation.
All right. Dave, who's ready first, Dave or Shane?
Dave looks ready.
Do I look ready?
Yeah, he's born ready.
Mm.
Born ready.
So I was going to go the old line of, you know, what beer, the beer that's in your hand, blah, 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 blah. I was actually thinking, what beer, because we drink a lot of our own beer, not for... Yeah, purposes of making sure it's okay and blah 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 blah.
Yeah, right.
So I'm not going to talk about that. But I buy most of my beer through this guy because he gives me a fucking great discount.
We'll edit that out.
And because he doesn't give me a discount, I'm supporting a local business. But the last beer. My assistant brewer Gab, who some of you may or may not have met, also being a small business, is our delivery guy on Thursdays and Fridays, who delivers beer to you on a Thursday and rings me every Thursday and says, right, I'm just about to turn up at Camperdown Cellars on Parramatta Road and says, what do you want me to buy? And I shit you not, last week I said, do you have any high-res or resin in the fridge?
Yes.
Did I not? And you didn't fucking have any.
I've got some in my fridge.
So the question is,
that's
when
why,
will you have
balls?
So
Brad bought them all.
Yeah.
I think we want that t-shirt back.
We'll take that back.
Yeah, thank you. Mission accomplished.
I play a game every time Gab comes around. It's like I look the percentile of what I'm buying to what I'm selling.
Yeah, yeah. What do I need? What do I need to get rid of?
We just heard from the Peanut Gallery that it's at Cameray Craft. Is it in the can? Plenty of resin at Cameray Craft.
So. A lot of resin at the moment, and on special during Crappy Week.
Shameless.
Look at this.
Shameless.
Absolutely shameless.
All right, let's keep it moving.
Crappy week event. Where do I start? I would have pitched ours on Friday in the brewery, but that's
sold
out.
But it's sold out.
Yeah.
I'm coming. I got a ticket.
Did you really?
Yeah, I got a ticket.
Awesome. Love you.
I'm super psyched.
I'm going to pitch Sip and Savor.
Ah, nice one. Yeah.
Which I reckon is going to be the new craft beer festival for the coming few years. So I think it's starting. You know, look, we've got some great ones. One of them was on the weekend, obviously, and we'll continue to support that. But Sip and Savor on Saturday and Sunday over in what's a
Carriageworks
yeah. in Redfern.
That's very exciting.
It's shaping up to be one of the best festivals I think that Sydney's seen in a long, long time, and I really want to make sure that we're supporting that. So.
It's a great venue, and I think like the whole concept is
it's
top guys, all the good brewers are there. If you're not going, make sure you are.
All right, well, we'll bring it over to Shane now. Shane, do you have a beer recommendation?
Do
Pliny the Elder? No, that's joking.
From source.
Pliny the Younger.
I don't think that I should be dropping a whole bunch of obscure beers, right? But there's a beer that I've been crushing a lot of. So I imagine that when some of you do visit the United States, you probably, at least, if you don't end up on the West Coast, you probably at least stop there on your way to your next destination. So if you find yourself there and you find yourself in the Pacific Northwest, you got to check out a brewery called Bailbreaker. And it's my man, Patrick Smith, who's a fourth generation hop farmer.
Wow.
So a lot of the people who are brewers or home brewers or drink hoppy beers in this room, you use hops from him. You buy hops from him or you consume beers that have hops grown by him and his family. What they decided to do is build a brewery attached to this hop farm. And this year, when they brewed their wet hop ale, they set the world record for how quickly you could pick hops off the plant into the beer.
Minutes.
And their beers are phenomenal. Because I mean, if you live on a hop farm, you kind of
it's pretty hard to fuck it up, right?
So, yes. Best harvest. So back in the day, if you use, we brewers use these metrics to determine how hoppy their beers are. One of them is IBUs, but the other, that doesn't tell the whole story, because you could just jack your beer full of high alpha hops, and it means that you have a lot of IBUs, but you don't use a lot of quantity of hops. So a better method is to determine how many pounds of hops you use per barrel, right? So back in the day, if you used 1 pound of hops per barrel, that was a lot. Nowadays, 2 or 3 pounds a barrel is pretty average. 4 or 5 pounds a barrel, that's a lot of hops, right?
I think the term is stripping the enamel off the teeth.
Yeah.
So I had this beer from Bailbreaker where they use 50 pounds of hops.
Holy shit!
That's ridiculous.
And, I thought it was just going to be like just horrible. It was delicious. So you got to check these guys out. It's phenomenal.
I think we had a question up the corner there as well.
Do we? Yeah.
When can Dave do this in Australia?
Dave, when can you do this in Australia?
This week?
I think that needs a Kickstarter to get that going.
Yeah. It sounds like a very expensive beer. But when you own the hop farm, it's a bit cheaper, right?
Exactly. So what he's probably up against, because I was talking to another brewer, if you're paying, let's say, $20 a pound for hops, if you do the math on that, it's $1,000 a barrel for Just in hops.
Just for the hops.
Yeah. And that doesn't include labor and, you know, malt and everything. So he could do it. He would just have to charge you $2,000 a keg.
So that's like, that's like 50 bucks a glass sort of a thing.
Ridiculous.
For a metric table, that's about 200 grams per liter.
200 grams a liter. That's,
wow.
Yeah.
All right.
Can
so,
we?
So then my my city beer week.
Yeah, I think that's what we're doing, yeah.
I mean, it's kind of a duplicate, but I got to recommend tomorrow night at the Bitter Few.
Nice.
Excellent. That is, I think, in my books, the best beer bar in inner Sydney at the moment.
Adrian, do you agree?
Probably, yeah. I'm there every Monday, so... Yeah.
Every Monday, Adrian and I are there with board games. Except today, obviously, but
yeah.
That's a thing, so get there.
Most Tuesdays as
most
well.
Tuesdays,
Wednesdays, yeah. Thursdays, and Fridays also.
Recently there was a week where I didn't go at all, and I got a text from Aaron, the provider there, and yeah. He goes, Tom, are you okay?
He was pretty heartbroken.
All right, so we're going to wrap it up. Thank you all for coming.
Big up for you guys. Thank you very much.
Yeah, big round of applause to our two guests, Shane Welch and Dave Patton. Thanks to the Pump House as well for having us. Thanks for making this I can only really say awesome event. It's been a lot of fun, super informative, all that shit. Liam, if anyone else has last things to say, we'll say it before I stop pressing record and, you know, turn the mixer off. But yeah,
all I want to say is I hope next year we can do it bigger and better.
Yeah. I think they're knocking down the Sydney Entertainment Centre, aren't they?
Yeah.
Otherwise we might be able to fill that out.
Although we've got auditions coming up for who's going to replace me next year.
You need to practice that fucking ukulele, so just go.
Fair call.
And I think that's what we're going to end on. So good night, everybody.
Cheers.
So, Shane, I love to hear your opinion on Untappd and everything like that. I would really love to hear your opinion on Up Dog.
Up Dog?
Yeah.
I mean, is this an inside joke? Because I'm
yeah.
I mean, I gotta Google it now. It's gotta be something. Google Up Dog, I don't know what it is.
I think the real question is, what is Craft Up Dog?
What's Craft Up Dog? Yeah.
What is Craft Up Dog?
All right.
I didn't say it though, you tried to leave.
You played that very well, I must say.